spend the chosen few on whom the Spirit came. 'Twere valiant saints, their hopes they knew, and mocked the cross and flame. They met the tyrant's brandished steel, a lion's glory maim.
And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your host, Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice, the Minstrel Boy. Lovely song and very relevant to today, folks. We shall never dwell in slavery. Now, how are we kept in slavery? Primarily through fear. And we've had an amazing counterattack to the work we're doing. We're going to talk about that before we bring on our guest, Ella Sturr. Ella, a Dutch journalist who was on a few weeks ago talking about child trafficking and ritual killing in Holland and the links to the Dutch royal family, and through them to Pope Francis Jorge Bergoglio, at least the ex-pope. Before that, I want to give you a little update about what's been happening. As you know, since February 22nd, we've had a number of breaking events. February 22nd, Bergoglio removed, Pope Francis, sidelined in power by three cardinals. He's now basically a lame duck figurehead pope. The day after that, February 23rd, our people in Rome stopped yet another Ninth Circle sacrificial cult ceremony at the San Lorenzo Church. And then March 10th, the puppet pope meets with the head of the Mormon Church, Russell Nelson, in a special little office in Vatican City. And all of this indicative of something very strange going on. We believe that the Mormon temple just built in Rome will be a site of the Ninth Circle sacrificial rituals now. With all the heat and all the light we've been shining on the Ninth Circle, they're looking for a new venue, basically. And it's now the Mormon temple from all the indicators. Why else would a pagan leader meet with a antichrist in the minds of the Mormons and sit down and shake hands together, when pagan churches like the Mormon temple are specifically prohibited from being operated anywhere in Rome? So all of this has shown a very interesting development. And in response, there have been some amazing counterattacks hitting us, not just yours truly, but our network around the world over the last week to 10 days. Before that, I should mention that a lot of these things now are posted at murderbydecree.com. Now, the ITCCS.org site was wiped out. We retrieved a lot of it and are reposting it on murderbydecree.com. So all of the ITCCS updates, the Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State, those updates are now found at murderbydecree.com, along with video evidence, priceless evidence of the work over the last 10 years or more of the Tribunal, and before that, the last 25 years of our work in Canada. Now, in response to these revelations, and it's interesting, just within 48 hours of that expose we did revealing the Mormon temple and its ties to the Ninth Circle in Bergoglio in Rome, right out of the blue, a member of this interesting group called the International Tribunal for Natural Justice, the ITNJ, starts attacking us over the emails. Now, what's really odd about this is that the ITNJ suddenly appeared out of nowhere last year with all of these lavish facilities. One of their directors is a member of the criminally convicted Anglican Church. They have a former CIA employee, if there is such a thing, Mr. Steele, as one of their members. And all of these kind of strange developments, we didn't put any thought to it. We did write to them from the Tribunal and invited them to be involved with us, but they ignored us, so we just ignored them. However, last week, when right after this whole thing in Rome starts blowing open, we get attacked for the first time by the ITNJ, who are, you know, again, using the usual smears. And it's very interesting, they're surfacing all the old smears that were done traditionally against ITCCS and myself. That is, we don't have any evidence, we haven't named who the judges are, you know, absurdly ignoring the fact that we need to protect the people doing these things, or, like our people in Canada, they can end up dead. Now, anyone of intelligence understands that. That's part of legal procedure when you're taking on criminal bodies. But no, they're pushing this to the maximum. And what was interesting was it coincided with a parallel attack from the Mormon Church against us as well. So these seem to be coming from the same sources, because these attackers are all saying the same things about us. What's interesting is yesterday the ITCCS wrote a response, very leveled, logical response, not counterattacking the ITNJ, but simply saying, We've had these questions about you. We still invite you to work with us. Please cease and desist from slandering Kevin Annett and the work of the ITCCS. Well, they came back with even greater slanders, and get this, a quote, this is really bizarre, from Mr. Steele, who one of their people who worked for the ITNJ, and Sasha Stone, who apparently set up the ITNJ. He seems to be the only spokesman for it. Get this quote. We will defer to the ITNJ as to what legal action, including referring Kevin Annett to the authorities for psychiatric evaluation and possible removal from the public sphere, unquote. Now, that's a direct quote from their email. John Robert Steele and Sasha Stone said they plan to report me to the authorities for, quote, psychiatric evaluation and possible removal from the public sphere, unquote. Well, I didn't know the ITNJ had that kind of pull with these unnamed authorities, whoever they are. Since they operate out of London, they operate actually just a block from Westminster in the Parliament, which is very interesting because no bona fide grassroots movement would be able to do that, let alone afford to do that. But it's interesting they would refer to that because in England there's a law called the Fixated Threat Law. And in 2008 they brought it in. It means if you are involved in a public campaign that's consistently naming heads of state or church or others as criminals, you can be deemed to be suffering from a mental illness and can be incarcerated for it as somebody fixated on certain issues or people. Well, obviously that's a blanket way to take out any dissident, but they're, you know, kind of referring to this indirectly as something they're going to do. It's very interesting. And again, it's designed to scare. It's designed to intimidate. Well, folks, I'm not scared. I'm not intimidated. It's a sign of weakness for them to be doing this to us right now. And it's a sign of that we're being effective. And that's the important thing. Now, before bringing Elle on, I just want to also mention that our response to this is very clear. We live in an insane society where child killing is the norm and it's protected. And those who object to it are called crazy or put in prison. We are living in a totalitarian regime globally, like corporatocracy, and our only response can be our power locally. And so on April 14th to 21st, as has been mentioned, there is an international day of action by the ITCCS in over 9 countries. And in that week, we are targeting not only the Catholic Church, but the Church of England, one of whose members serves with this ITNJ, any church, the United Church of Canada, other churches that have been involved systematically in killing and trafficking children, involved in the satanic circles, they're being targeted, not only for direct action at a community level, but pressuring governments to nullify their tax-exempt status. Why should taxpayers endorse these criminal bodies and support them? That's a violation of international law for any government to expect you to do that. We're asking people to take direct action at these churches, and we've actually produced a very amusing little thing called What You Can Do About Church Crimes in Your Neighborhood. Church Stoppers Manual, 25 Ways to Halt Crime and Have Fun While You're Doing It. Well, this is a very kind of provocative little set of suggestions you can do. Not only holding activities at the church, but one example is you put police tape around church buildings saying close for moral renovation. You hand to the clergy of the churches a copy of a common law stand-down order requiring that they cease collecting money for open criminal bodies like their employer. You take some friends and camp out in the national or local offices of the Catholic, Anglican, United Churches. You announce you're not going to leave until the church officials open their secret archives and surrender themselves to the authorities for prosecution as child traffickers. You can invite poor folks to the church and then go in there and take the collection plates and hand the money out to them. We've actually done this successfully in Vancouver. And when the police show up, we say, well, we're just performing a public service here, officer. This is a public taxpayer-supported body. We can do what we like as long as we're not harming anybody. And after all, we're doing what Jesus said. Take all that you have and give to the poor. Well, shouldn't the church folks be doing that anyway? So this is all, you know, very healthy kinds of stuff to do, because it's showing these people we're not afraid of them, we're putting it back in their face, and frankly, that over the years has been what's gotten results. So if you'd like a copy of this, along with a leaflet to hand out to Catholic Church members, asking them to fill it out, put it in the collection plate, and tell them to stop funding, and they will not fund and tithe anymore with the Catholic Church, write to us. We can send you all of this information. Write to us at thecommonland@gmail.com. and see murderbydecree.com. We're going to have a lot of fun over the next few months, and we want you all to be a part of it. And do not be afraid of these people. They make threats when they're afraid, because they have a lot to lose. We have nothing to lose. Now, after that rant, was that a rant? No, I think it was just passion. Here we have, I hope, Ella on the line. Ella, are you there?
Yes, hi. How are you?
You are, Ella. Hi. Good to have you back.
Good to talk to you again.
And now, I wanted to remind folks some of what you talked about last time. And we're back. Sorry about that technical gaffe, folks. We had some trouble connecting with Ella. But she's with us now on the air. Ella, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you very clearly. Hopefully you can hear me too.
Yes, I can. Now we're going to proceed, hoping the folks can hear this. First of all, why don't you remind us who you are and a little bit of a recap, you know, what your research interests would be. And let's talk about some of the new evidence you have about criminality in the Netherlands.
Yeah, so I have a blog in the Netherlands, and I write a lot about pedophile networks and the involvement of the Justice Department and other people high up in society. We're investigating with a group of people what the links are between all these different dossiers and cases, and we see clear patterns that are at play and also are comparable with international cases, like the Mark Dutroux case.
Now, just to talk a little bit about things we touched on briefly last time, this is really a continuation of our talk a couple of weeks ago. You described, a former head of Justice Department in the Netherlands, a guy called Demmick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He is a very notorious figure, and he seems to be linked to people in the government and the royal family, and indirectly through Queen Maxime of the Netherlands to Jorge Bergoglio, the present pope. Now, could you talk a little bit about who this Demmick fellow is and the evidence against him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Well, Joris Demmick was the Secretary General of the Dutch Justice Department since 2002. And he was accused of being a pedophile, and a large group of people tried to get him convicted. And despite the evidence and the claims by many people and several witnesses, victims, and other evidence, he was finally acquitted in 2017. And this is roughly 20 years where they tried to get him convicted.
And could you tell him some of the things he was accused of, some of the evidence against him?
Well, three of the victims came from Turkey, and they claimed to have been raped by Mr. Demmick while he was visiting Turkey in the 90s, I believe it was. And there were also three witnesses, of which I would say two victims that claimed to have sex with him when they were minors, underage. And these are the main claims, but there's also reports of him having visited child brothels in Amsterdam and other cities, and also in Prague, in Czechoslovakia, yeah. So that's in a nutshell the accusations, but this legal case is characterized by corruption, bribery, intimidation, assassinations, and whitewashing by the media.
Now, who is this Demmick? What was his actual position in the government? What's his full name and what was his position?
His full name was, as far as I know, Joris Demmick. I don't know if he has other Christian names, but that's how he's known. And he was the Secretary General of the Justice Department. So he was the head of justice, comparable to the position that Jeff Sessions held and now his successor, William Barr, in the United States.
Amazing. And so would you say that's the reason he had so much protection than that, or was there other factors, do you think?
Yes, that's one of the reasons. Well, it is very clear that there are many, many indications that high officials within the Dutch Justice Department are implicated in pedophile networks, and that they also use their power to protect the network. And I'm not talking about everyone, but key figures in the Justice Department. And there are claims, and it is very likely, if you look at the case, that Demming was holding compromising material against very high officials. So that was protecting him, but it actually also ties into another case, because there was a secret deal that was made with the Turkish government that blackmailed the Dutch government with incriminating evidence against Demming. And they promised to withheld this evidence in return for the arrest of Baybacin. And Baybacin was a Kurdish Turk businessman, and he played an important role in the Kurdish state and the foundation of the Kurdish parliament that was held in exile in The Hague. And that triggered the fury in Turkey, and they wanted to get him arrested and probably even killed. And so, in
Right.
return for protecting Demming, they arrested him.
It's interesting too, because what we found in our research is that, and I'm not sure what you found in terms of these pipelines, these networks that are bringing children into Europe. Often they involve immigrant children, North African or Turkish children that are brought in, for example, through Madeira, Portugal, and then channeled all through Holland and Belgium and other places. Do you find that kind of Turkish link as well?
I don't know if these children were brought in. There's no evidence in this case, but what is interesting is that one of the witnesses that made a police report in this case and then was severely intimidated afterwards, but he was working as a child or teenage prostitute, not only in the Netherlands, but also in Prague and Greece. So he also reports of these businesses going on, more east in Europe. And we know from other cases, like the Zandvoort case and the Marc Dutroux case, that children were smuggled or trafficked from Germany and Poland as well, and brought into Belgium and the Netherlands.
Now, what actually eventually happened to Demick? He went to trial. Did he do time? Where is he now?
Well, he retired in 2012, and he got a golden handshake, how we put it. So he got a big bonus, and he was rewarded by the Queen. He like it reminds me of the Jimmy Savile case, actually. No, he was acquitted in 2017, and there were many, many attempts to get him convicted. There were several people who initiated a lawsuit, but well, they basically ignored the evidence, or they intimidated the witnesses. Some people got killed. I know that there's at least six people that died mysteriously in this case.
Would those be witnesses?
Well, I have a list here. One of them is a journalist. There is a chauffeur, a driver that used to work for him, and he died of a heart attack. But according to some sources, he had complained about Deming having sex in his car. There is the lawyer, the attorney of one of the witnesses that was later severely intimidated and had to withdraw his testimony. And an important suspicious death was Rob van den Heuvel. No, Rob den Heuvel. He was a Supreme Court judge. And there's a document that was leaked in 2017 that he actually made a court ruling deciding that Deming would have to be prosecuted, And then he drowned in when he was in a canoe on a river.
Convenient. So there's another example you have of quite a blatant intervention, like this Queen Beatrix and the royal family. You know, other eyewitnesses have described them providing children for these rituals. But there is quite a startling connection with this Robert Mikkelsen case. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, who he was and the ties with Maxime and the others?
Sure. Yeah, that that took place. Well, the story broke in 2010, but according to reports, it was going on a lot longer. And Robert Mikkelsen was arrested in 2010 for the abuse of 87 babies and toddlers in an Amsterdam daycare center. Yes, it's really horrendous. The youngest victim was only 19 days old.
Oh my God, 19 days old?
Yes, yes. And, well, according to the reports, these young children were taken out of the daycare center and brought into a photo studio where they were used for child porn, or they were sold for a day or half a day to clients that were willing to pay large sums of money. And what is interesting in this case is that Marcel Vervloesem, who is a Belgian activist researching pedophile networks in Belgium, he reported in 2001 to the police in Belgium that he had heard of a daycare center in Amsterdam where these young children were abused, and it was ignored. And there's also a report of a parent that made the police report, but this parent got convicted for libel and slander and had to pay a fine of 1,800 euros. And the way he was finally caught was through a search by the FBI. The FBI was researching a child pornography case, and they saw a picture of a very young child, like a toddler, with a stuffed Miffy figure, which is a typical Dutch character. And that request for investigation came through another channel. So the gatekeepers in the Justice Department didn't catch it in time. And the police, who was asked to do the investigation, contacted the television station, who would have a broadcast, had the picture broadcasted, to get the child and the location identified. And within hours, it was known where the daycare center was. And Robert Mikkelsen was arrested within 5 hours.
So what happened at his trial and subsequently?
Well, he confessed. And even though he had confessed the abuse of 87 babies and toddlers, he probably abused even more children, but he sort of played mind games with the police, like, well, my memory is like a library, and you point out the books, and I tell you what's in the books. And apparently he had this photographic memory. And then he just said to the police, you haven't pointed out all the books. But he also had a criminal record in Germany prior to when he came to the Netherlands. So it is a mystery that he got a statement of good behavior, which you need in order to work in a daycare center. So already there's corruption involved. And the fact that Marcel Vervloesem had already reported on this case in 2001, which was prior to Robert Mikkelsen's arrival. So this had been going on.
Now tell us about how the, I believe, members of the royal family intervened on his behalf in the trial.
Well, this information came from the witness statement that Annemarie van Blijenburg made to the ITCCS. From my end, I know that he must have gotten help. I mean, that's clear, and he's also presented as the sole perpetrator in this case. But, you know, if there were many other people, expressing their concerns and nothing happened, then he must have gotten help, because how on earth can you abuse and traffic so many children out of a daycare center and have nobody else notice this? This is impossible.
Right. And
So,
I do recall Anne-Marie talking about that in some detail, and her saying that definitely there was influence from the Dutch royals on the case, that Maxima and her husband, present King of the Netherlands, Willem-Alexander, had tried to influence the judge in that case. And what was the outcome of that whole case, and what
well,
happened?
Robert M. got convicted. He got a pretty much the maximum sentence, 19 years in prison plus compulsory mental treatment, which is for life. And but the other people that were involved, like the director of the daycare center and his spouse, were not convicted. And what I find very interesting is that Robert M. was represented by three expensive lawyers. So who paid for them, right? Where the parents of the victims had to, do a, how do you say that, crowdfunding to pay for a lawyer.
Well, it would
And
suggest,
another.
yeah, the theory that the suggestion by Anne-Marie that the royal family intervened, would obviously allow that to be going on.
Well, what I also found interesting is that in the appeal case, the attorney of Robert M, of the defendant, they made sure that the child porn that was found in the apartment and on the computer was not investigated, was not used as evidence. And this is also something that we see in the Zandvoort case, and we saw it in the Marc Dutroux case, where the evidence that was found in his house was not used as evidence. And I think this is because they know that it would implicate other people, so they try to eliminate it in a certain way to, take it out of the investigation.
Right, and by other people, who do you think they're talking about? Obviously, people at a fairly high level.
Well, it should be, I mean, because these children were sold for high sums of money.
Now, did the Dutch media cover this? Was there any reference? I know this is the answer before you tell me, but was there any reference at any point to links to the royal family or people higher up?
No, the way that the media deals with these cases is that when they know they can't stop it anymore because there's too much information leaking out, they present the perpetrator as someone who is a madman operating by himself. And
Yeah,
so
they
there
always
was
say that.
quite a lot of media attention, but not the involvement of other people or a network, or that he was protected. No.
No, the lone gunman theory again. Now,
Yes.
if you could speculate a little bit based on everything you know, and your knowledge of this is quite voluminous, how do you think this does tie into the present Queen and King of the Netherlands? And do you think this is just the tip of the iceberg?
Unfortunately, I think this is just the tip of the iceberg, and I think this problem is much more extensive and goes much deeper than what we have seen so far, because I think only so many cases make it to the media. If we go back to the Deming case, it is also linked to the Apollo case. And Apollo was a code name for the Zandvoort case, where the large collection of child pornography that was found in 1998, but is also a secret dossier that is classified as national security. And national security usually means that there are high profile people involved. And Apollo was a sailing boat which was owned by the director of the KPMG, which is an accountants firm that's also linked to the royal family. And this boat was used to take boys on board, and they would abuse the boys. And Manuel Schwartwald, which was a young boy of 12 years old, he was abducted from Berlin, and he disappeared in a prostitution ring in Amsterdam and/or Rotterdam. Apparently, he was killed on the Apollo boat, according to two journalists of Die Welt, a German newspaper. And according to Marcel van Vloeshem, Prince Klaus, which was the husband of Queen Beatrix, also made trips on the Apollo as well as Deming. And according to Marcel van Vloeshem, there were videotapes showing Prince Klaus and Deming and Salomonsson, which was the attorney and family friend of the royal family and also the custodian of Willem-Alexander. And I think he was referring to three videos. And you see these names, Prince Klaus and Salomonsson, you see them mentioned by several witnesses and in reports leaking out. So there's the link, and there's also reasons to suspect that the Dutch government has been blackmailed for decades, also for the alleged pedophile activities of Prince Klaus.
Now, go back a little bit for people who didn't hear your last interview. You did draw some connections between the present royal family, the Queen Willem-Alexander and Maxima Zorriaga from Argentina, and their ties to Bergoglio, the similarities of where they stay in Argentina, and that bit.
Prince Bernard, the grandfather of the current king, had already met the Zorriguetas, I think during the Second World War, and he visited Bariloche, which is a sort of Swiss-like region in Argentina during the winter holidays frequently. And this region, Bariloche, was an enclave for the German Nazis that had fled after the Second World War to escape the Nuremberg trials. So high-profile Nazis went there to seek refuge and settled down there. And there are even reports that Hitler, according to the official accounts, had committed suicide. In fact, fled with a submarine to Argentina and spent a substantial amount of his life in that same region.
And in terms of some of the other aspects of, you know, what we're uncovering about this ninth circle cult, I mean, it's interesting that so much of this comes back to the Netherlands. And I know you said last time that's because, you know, stuff has come out, but it's really all over the place. Do you have, from your research, have you looked at where else this extends to? Do you have other evidence of other countries or, you know, as part of this network?
Well, according to some people, the Netherlands is the hub in certainly in Europe when it comes to child trafficking and well, the big cases like the Marc Dutroux case and the Zandvoort case, which are linked, seem to indicate that. But yes, it does extend out to Great Britain. We know of many scandals there. And the Zandvoort case also extended out to France. So I don't think it is. It happens everywhere because it is clearly tied into the political system. Politicians and high officials get compromised by inviting them to these pedophile parties. They're photographed and then they're easily controlled. This is basically how the system worldwide works. If you hear, yeah. witnesses
I remember
like.
reading just a few years ago, and it was in a community paper out of Washington, D.C. The CIA admitted that they were running child brothels in Bangkok since before the time of the Vietnam War in order to entrap congressmen and senators and blackmail them and control them politically to get what the CIA wanted. This seems to be standard ops for intelligence. I know Mossad does the same thing in Israel to control prime ministers and that. So, yeah, that whole intelligence aspect of this, along with the big money involved. Have you come across evidence of, like, the companies, the banks that are underwriting any of this, or have you gotten into that?
No, I haven't investigated that aspect, but there's a lot of money involved in this. And it's the one of the most lucrative businesses, child pornography and child trafficking. And also it's sort of the highest commodity. So it is really almost like a status symbol to have children on your party, because if you can afford them as prostitutes or victims, I should say, then, you know, in certain circles, that's considered as, you know, a very wealthy and powerful position because you can get away with it.
Right.
So if you look at the list of people that were implicated in the Marc Dutroux case, we're talking about judges, people of nobility, people that were member of Club de Lorraine, which was a
right.
business club, also attending the Bilderberg Group. So that kind of high-profile people were implicated in the Dutroux case, and we find similar things in the Netherlands, like the political top, like many people are implicated.
Yes.
Also through your information that you've received.
I find it interesting, too, you know, the whole aspect of the cover-up of this. It's so organized and so automatic, and it happens the same way, whether it's the Netherlands or America or Canada. Obviously, there's a common system at work. And, mm-hmm. you know, the whole cover-up aspect is a crime in itself, and it's hard to for people to get their minds around, because it gives them a sense of, well, what can you do since there's such massive, you know, forces at work trying to suppress this all the time and allow it to continue?
Yes, but I think one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that we have to bring it into the light, because these crimes can only exist in the shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And these practices are depending on secrecy and fear. So if we destroy this secrecy and if we stop being afraid and, you know, become courageous again, then even a small group can be very powerful.
Well, we found that in practice. That's exactly right, Ella. Have you found that, you know, I remember years ago there were thousands of people demonstrating in the streets during the Dutroux case. Do you find that kind of interest developing? Is any group making that initiative to make this an issue of protest, you know, like we've done with ITCCS?
Well, in the Netherlands, that is still a very small group, because the protest you're referring to was in Belgium.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, but what the Dutch are not really willing to go on the street. But what is very interesting is that in the recent years, three former prison directors, so high... how do you say, the top officials within the Justice Department, demonstrated in front of the Supreme Court in The Hague and also in front of the Parliament. And initially, there were just the three of them. They were demonstrating to get Bai Basin released because they knew that his conviction was based on falsified evidence. And, well, it's the case is also characterized by corruption and so many things that are not in check. And it was interesting that even the three of them created a panic within the Supreme Court. People started running in the hallway, looking out on the window and, making phone calls, and there was this security guy that came out. No, no, you can't stand here. And so they crossed the street, and a student crossed the street. But even three people just standing there with their signs can make an impact.
Definitely.
And yeah.
Now, we've got about, with you, about 5 minutes left. I wondered if there's anything else you want to emphasize or point to people that's hopeful that might be going on, kind of related to the work we've talked about.
Well, I think that it's important to realize that this has become an epidemic because the people that commit these crimes, they thought that they were above the law, and we need to set very clear boundaries. And we are also programmed to respect authorities or to respect formal rulings, but also, we're programmed to look away from what we find very difficult, very confronting, and
Right.
especially within the love and light community, there's still a lot of people that are programmed to look away from the dark. And I just want to say that, if you abandon the children that are being abused, you're not so enlightened as people like to think they are. And
Absolutely.
if you want to focus on the love and light, which is a good thing, then you can do meditations on restoring justice and helping and freeing children. And one of the things that you could do is, an important aspect in personal healing or manifesting desired outcomes is by saying grace of a situation that you desire, that as if it has already taken place. So if you finish the day or start the day with thanking that, that pedophilia no longer exists, that pedophile networks are resolved, that the justice is restored, and that you're so grateful that we are now in a different era, we can actually manifest this also on an energetic level. And I think this is something that everyone can do that. You don't need, to be part of the police or be in a powerful position. Everyone can do something simple as this on top of other things.
Right, and I wanted to ask you too before you left, have you come across evidence of mass graves? I know that both Tose and Anne-Marie pointed out where these kids are being buried. Has there been any talk about that, or do you have any knowledge of that?
No, in regards to the satanic ritual abuse, this information is probably even more hidden and more explosive, that people are not easily disclose this information. So I think that's another layer that needs to be peeled away, that is sort of underneath the pedophile, criminality that we are revealing right now.
Right, and it's interesting too, this new Mormon temple in Rome. And at the very time, it's very interesting the way this happens, the synchronicity, but just this last month, a number of Mormons came forward to describe very brutal sacrificial rituals in Salt Lake City at the Mormon temple. And here's the Mormons showing up, sitting hand down, shaking hands with Bergoglio, opening a new temple, and I think it's more than coincidental. So it's interesting how this stuff is all coming out now. We're definitely at an opening point in history.
Hopefully, and hopefully we can put an end to it.
Any final words, Ella?
Just keep doing what you're doing, and we have to work towards the world as we like to see it, and not how it was created for us.
Now, do you have a website or links you can send people to?
Yes, my website is ellastair, dot NL, but unfortunately, my articles are primarily in Dutch. But Google Translate helps. So if you're really interested in an article, you can run it through Google Translate and you'll get the gist of it.
Right. Elle, I want to thank you. We'll have you on again. Please keep us updated about your very valuable research and other things.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time and talk to you soon.
Thank you, Elle.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now. That was Alistair from the Netherlands, ELLASTER.N for Norman L. And actually, works fairly well. Gives you the rough idea of what the person is writing. And just kind of a further from what we talked about in the introduction to the show, somebody wrote to me and he said, well, why are you asking people to take the collection plates from these churches and hand it to the poor? Well, you know, here's the thing. It isn't simply an act of faith, because I've heard Christians say we should do the same thing. But under the law, the Catholic Church, the Anglican Church especially, are two what's called transnational criminal organizations. They span borders. They traffic human beings. They've committed crimes of genocide over centuries, and they launder money for organized crime. That's all been proven in courts. As a result, under this Convention on the Crimes of Transnational Organizations, it's a United Nations convention brought in 2000 that has binding authority on signatories. And it says when these transnational criminal bodies like the Catholic and Anglican churches are operating, they have forfeited their money. That is, the UN convention says police officials with proper warrants can go in there and seize their funds. Well, the common law gives that warrant to anyone. There's a standing arrest warrant and a reclamation warrant issued by the tribunal and its common law court, which allows any of you to take this document, walk in, and seize the funds of the Catholic Church, because that money is going to go towards all of these crimes and is going to fund the kind of crimes we've heard about today against children. So you have the legal right and the moral duty to do exactly that, to seize those funds, to peacefully occupy these church facilities. There's one suggestion, you open up to the homeless. You know, you turn these churches into what they should be. And we have every right to seize those funds and distribute them. So it's not a crazy act. It's a legal and moral act. And, in fact, it's a crazy act to continue to give money to these churches and allow them to operate. And so these are important things to keep in mind over the next while. There's going to be lots of attempts to divide and conquer us, to still instill fear in us. And this latest assault by the so-called ITNJ is more proof of that. This very nebulous body, again, has... former, and he actually boasts about it, that he describes himself as a former CIA operative. Robert David Steele, his name is. He came back and again threatened the ITCCS and me personally with that they're going to try to get the authorities to lock me up and put me in a loony bin. Why would people act in such an irrational manner unless we were hitting a nerve, or they're just doing something deliberately provocative to try to... get us to do something irrational, which we're not going to do. From the very beginning, we've stood on the high ground, moral ground, and evidentiary ground. Everything we've claimed has been proven in practice. I've never been taken into court by anybody or sued. It's all been confirmed indirectly. As a matter of fact, in Canada, without acknowledging me, the Canadian government used whole chunks of our evidence in murderbydecree.com in their final report of the bogus Truth and Reconciliation Commission, of course, watered down and redirected in the way they wanted, but it's all being acknowledged. So we're standing on what's true, what's factual. And you might hear a lot of things over the Internet, a new counterattack, because clearly that's coming down now. Because of this revelation of things in Rome, our highlighting and discovery of this Mormon-Vatican link, the transfer of the Ninth Circle, the probable transfer of the Ninth Circle ceremonies to the Mormon temple in Rome, all of this stuff is coming out now, and it's for the first time we've been getting exposures of hundreds of thousands of hits on our YouTubes, thanks to Sarah Westall and other media people who have been giving us more exposure. We've had more exposure, we're hitting a nerve definitely, and they know that on April 14th to 21st we're taking it to the streets. There's going to be people all over the world occupying Catholic churches, demanding their members of Parliament and Congress and government revoke the tax-exempt status of the Catholic and Anglican Church and the United Church of Canada in Canada. These are things we can all be doing. So if you are concerned about children, if you have any shred of humanity and want to do more than talk about it, then write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com, murderbydecree.com. You can see all of the postings of our tribunal now there at that murderbydecree.com site. Order all of our books. Just put in the name Kevin Annett into Amazon.com, and all 10 of our recent books will come up. These are concrete ways you can save the lives of children. And also write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com, for a copy of this very funny, I think, little manual of how you can stop church crimes in your neighborhood. 25 ways to do it. And be creative. You know, I had a guy call me I remember last year when I got this call, he said, you know, I sit outside my church in my car so I'm safe from the cops, and I take a bullhorn, and through the megaphone, I talk to the church people going in. I sit outside the cathedral, and I'm talking to all of them. I'm reading out stuff from your website, Kevin. I'm, you know, doing this, and then when the cops show up, I drive away, or when people start, you know, attacking me, I just drive away. Kind of reminds me of Chileans I knew once who said whenever they went on strike, they got in the back of lorries so that when the soldiers came up and started shooting everybody, they could drive away quick. Well, you know, these are the tactics you need to use in a police state, which is what we live under. And just because the police state hasn't touched you yet doesn't mean it isn't in existence, people. Any of us can be targeted at any point. That's why we cannot be afraid, and we have to hang together. They're going to try to divide us in the coming months with scare tactics, smears against yours truly and anyone else on the front line, the old lies. They can't use anything new. You notice these are the same recycled lies from 10 years ago. We say, let's see the evidence. We've stood on the evidence. We've stood on our own personal example of how to stop these crimes and save the lives of children. Now you all need to carry that burden with us. It isn't just me. I'm the messenger. You guys have to carry this on wherever you are. So on that note, I want to again remind you that we're here every Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time at bbsradio.com. Here we stand. Please read up on this, especially at murderbydecree.com. And we've recently posted some very damning video evidence that we've put together on everything we've talked about and even more. So in the weeks ahead, contact us, be part of this campaign. And don't forget, like the song you're going to hear going out again says, nothing can take from us our freedom, and it would be better to die than to live in slavery. That is our message as we struggle to keep alive as free men and women. I thank you all. This is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. We'll be back next week. Stay strong. Stay clear.
A glorious band, the chosen few on whom the Spirit came. Valiant saints, their hopes they knew, and mocked the cross and flame. They met the time.